Hello and welcome to Comadres Comic. This is episode 38. We are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, girls. How are you guys doing?
Been a while. I'm doing good.
I'm getting over a cold, so I'm going to tell you now that I'm a little raspy. And I'm going to try to not cough as much as I probably really need to.
She has been dead on her feet, like, for a couple days now.
Yes, Eddie got sick from when he traveled to Washington, to RenCon. And then I would say probably about 4 days after he started feeling sick, I thought I had missed it. And I started feeling sick, and oh man, it's really wiped me out. It was like a head cold situation, but it just zapped my energy. Like, I was in bed at least 3 times over the week before 5 o'clock.
Wow.
They almost got me infected, but then I was able to, like, because one day I was just so fatigued. And I had like vertigo, but I didn't end up getting sick. I like just took a very, very long nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rest really has been helpful. So
yeah, and then I got better.
But I'm getting better.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad. I just take naps just because.
Yeah.
So being sick, I know that like really wears on you. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
So let's just go right into it. How about Chisme de la Semana, Jen? What do you got for us?
I have some very funny chisme. And maybe it's a bit of old news now, but has it been 2 weeks now, I think? That Batman Damn number one
came
out.
It's been 2 weeks, yes.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks since the infamous Batman Dick comic came out. And to those who don't know, first of all, DC Comics has decided to put out a new label, a new run, I guess.
Imprint.
A new imprint, yes. A new imprint of comics called DC Black Label, which is supposed to be, I guess, like their Marvel Knights or mm-hmm. their like Max series.
Max, yeah. That's what I thought of when I heard of it.
But I mm-hmm. thought Marvel Max was more like DC Vertigo, but now they're doing DC Black?
Black Label.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But specifically with that title, Black Label. And
So is this more like an X-rated stuff? I don't know anything about it, so please.
I think they themselves are trying to figure that out as well. Because the thing, if those of you who don't know, Batman Damned, it was done by Brian Azzarello and... Oh, who was the writer? I should have this information on hand. But most people will recognize Brian Azzarello's name offhand.
Oh, yes.
But, so, when... It was supposed to be a more serious, darker, grittier Batman. More mature Batman.
First of all, that just makes me laugh. I mean,
that makes
how
me
much
laugh
more
too.
Mature, dirty, and gritty do you want Batman to get?
He already lives underground in a freaking cave, the Bat Cave. What does he have to do? Does he have to be literally covered in mud? Is that how grittier it has to be? But anyways, back to this, Batman Damned was basically the launch of this one. And in the comic, and if you haven't heard somehow, because it really blew up, in the comic itself, we get a shot of Batman's dick. Like, okay, look, and this is where...
a little side view.
A little side note, but they could have done better.
It was very understated.
It was so understated, and people were blowing up about it. I'm just like, just for like the shadow of a dick. That's literally it. And I'm just like, oh, come on.
So is he a shower or a grower?
Honestly, just how it was drawn, it gives me the impression that Batman is half hard all the time.
Ooh. Oh my god, dude! I just got chills.
Honestly, I feel like that's on brand, though.
Dude, I seriously felt something in the nether regions. Like, my mind just went really... Like, I wasn't expect to be that blown away when you said it. Sorry, I got to get my mind out of the gutter right now, because I'm all flushed.
You're flustered. Oh my god, I didn't know this is the direction we were going, but
I didn't
here
either.
We are.
I wasn't expecting to feel this much about it. It's a cartoon character. It's a comic. Like, really.
Anyways,
okay.
So this blew up, and we have been. I am still every once in like at least once a day still. whenever I'm working.
Oh, being asked.
Asked if we have Batman Dam number one. Mm-hmm. Because once it got out, once it hit the internet, those comics flew off of the shelves. And here's another thing is that they weren't conveniently comic sized. This is like a magazine edition.
Magazine size.
Okay. book. And it took up a lot of space. So honestly, I was just like, I was partially annoyed.
Yeah.
I was just like, why is this book so goddamn big? And now we kind of know.
It's funny because I was there on Wednesday. I feel like I was there in the morning for some reason. Or was it a Thursday?
You were. Because I opened on Wednesdays.
Uh-huh.
So, no, I think Eddie cover for me? Because he needed to go.
I don't remember, someplace. But I remember that I was there the very next day. Mm-hmm. And people were coming in left and right. And people were calling. And every phone call was about that darn book. And there was so much hype in the store that people that weren't even there for the book were buying multiple copies. Because they were like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And like, such a frenzy.
Wow. Yeah, it was like a freaking reading frenzy. And now that book is going, one of the books is going for $60. And here is why. They are not reprinting it.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. They were going to, but they were going to censor Batman's dick out of it. Aww. And they were going to take it out.
But why?
And that caused even more. And now they've just decided to not reprint it at all.
They said because the actual panels that contained that artwork did nothing to drive the story along, so they were going to go ahead and just censor it out because of all of the uproar. And one of the things that I kept hearing or seeing about people who were like very upset about it was, this is Batman is a comic for children. I'm like, people saying that are not reading Batman.
Oh, they are definitely not.
It's like, have you met the Joker? Have you met Harley?
Have they not seen a single Batman movie? Did they not see Anne Hathaway in the cat suit? Like, No. I mean, Batman is a power fantasy. And it's a power fantasy for grown people and for teenagers. Like, that's their age range. Like, 13 to, like, 34.
13 to, like, 60.
I mean, it's a book about what happens when somebody suffers severe psychological trauma. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what Batman is.
Yeah, that's the character.
Yeah.
And so I'm just all like, yeah, Batman. I mean, like, yeah, you have the animated series and that's for kids and stuff like that. But like, specifically the Black Label itself, why are you, they advertised it as being,
right,
like kind of like not X-rated. We weren't really sure what it was, but it was supposed
mature.
To be mature.
I mean, that's what the max is. It's mature.
But then again, people walk into the comic shop and buy the kids Walking Dead. Yeah. So,
so Jen, in the beginning, you were right with the Brian Azzarello. He's actually the writer. The illustrator is Lee Bermejo.
Lee Bermejo. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What ethnicity is he?
I don't know.
Huh. But,
Not to cut you off, but I saw a Facebook post where there was a somebody who had like a stack of those books, and it said $75 cash only, come pick it up, here's the address
of Batman Dan books.
Yes.
Interesting.
$75 each, and he had like 10
each. Wow.
Yeah. Each, yeah, that's about how much they're going for.
Yeah, so I was really surprised.
If you have one of those infamous Batman dick issues, it's worth money now.
I'm
kind of sorry.
Who knows for how long? But banging off of that, continuing on with this, Batman Dam number one will not be reprinted, but Batman Dam number two has a new on sale date of December 5th. So that's when the next issue is going to come out. And I'm thinking that they are going to crack down on, because like I said, we're not really sure how far they're willing to take the Black Label. And I think that we have gotten the explicit, I guess they are going for like, because they're going for nudity, but they're not going to show genitalia, basically.
Boo.
Yeah. And going off of that, Batman Dam number 3 will be solicited on January DC previews with an on-sale date of March 13th.
For number 3? You can make me wait till next year.
Yeah, they're making us wait till next year.
And 3 months into next year.
Yeah, yeah. So you can go ahead and go to your local comic shop and ask for
a pre-order.
A pre-order, yes. of both issues 2 and 3. We might have to wait for number 3 because it's not being solicited yet until January.
I actually never got to even read number 1. I had a copy set aside and it got so crazy that we ended up having to bring it to the shop to give to a customer. And so I never actually got to read it. So
I can't help but wonder that the fact that they're not going to be reprinting number 1, but like, are they going to do graphic novels of this thing? And are they going to censor that?
Yeah.
And I feel like that, I think this is a situation like they're not really sure what they're going to be doing. Because, one, I think they should reprint it in at least the graphic novel if they're not going
to
be
reprinting it. It's the only way I'm going to be able to read it because
I missed issue 1. Like, I saw the panel that it was because Eamon had read it and he showed it to me. And I saw
the panel too.
Yeah. So I saw the infamous panel and I was underwhelmed. I was just like, this is what people are losing their freaking minds over. I've seen better stuff on the internet. But anyways. but that is my chisme.
Great. Thanks so much for that. All right, guys. Kristen, what time is it?
What time is it? It's always beer time, yes! Sarah.
Awesome sauce.
Well, today we have a treat for me. I don't know about anybody else, but Sarah is such a good beer finder.
Beer mom.
And she always goes and stands in the long lines of the local breweries that have special beers that they are releasing, limited releases. And she has 2 today from one of my favorite local breweries in Los Angeles, South Bay area, called Monkish. And Monkish, actually, when they first started, did mostly Belgians, but I think they've kind of moved past that and are kind of branching out. But today we, because one of the beers that we have today is actually an American style IPA. So this is something that the name is actually very intriguing to me. It's called Swap Meats. I wanted more information about that. There's no info here really about why it's called that, but it's very interesting to me. It is an ABV of 8.3, so it's a little up there. I mean, it is an IPA, but even for an IPA, it's a little bit high. It is a double IPA brewed with Nelson, Citra, Mosaic, and Galaxy hops. And if you are in the Los Angeles area, Monkish is located at 20311 Southwestern Avenue in Torrance. And that's actually within a mile radius of my home.
Very convenient to Kristen.
Yes. So this is a limited brew. It's only brewed once. So once this runs out, you will never have the opportunity to get it or buy it again. And Jen's holding it up against the light right now. It's very, very like milky, like
very opaque.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not exactly hazy. Like
This is kind of like this is what their brews usually look like. This kind of color and this haze.
Mm-hmm.
This thick, kind of I wouldn't say muggy, golden, but this thick orange.
It almost looks unfiltered.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, cheers, guys.
It smells so good. It has the IPA smell for sure.
Oh, yeah. I actually like how the can looks, too.
Ooh.
I like it.
I like it, too.
That's a very nice... It's sweet to me.
It is a little sweet.
Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
There is no information on the can. Usually sometimes they like, most people that can their brews like to embellish a lot of description and the inspiration behind, but because I think Monkish, they churn out these releases, on a weekly basis, and mm-hmm. sometimes 2 releases.
Oh, do they really?
Yes, they do.
Oh, I didn't know it was that often.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's a double can release, but on a weekly basis, they release at least 1. Sometimes 2 and occasionally 3.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The go-to dates are like Wednesdays.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Occasionally they'll throw in a Friday and a Saturday.
I know. I always see you. I'm standing in line
standing in line again, guys. Yeah, So it's really cool. Usually, like, because I stand in line, I usually, like, take a comic book. So it's like beer and comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really cool.
Usually see it on Snapchat.
Yeah. And, you know, you get to know everybody there. And, you know, the coolest thing, one of these cute observations that I did was, you know how, like, women kind of, like, their status symbol or, like, their creativity or whatever, like, their self-expression is through a purse, like, whatever mm-hmm. purse they have. With guys, it's the kind of beer carrying case. So, like, the big thing right now, like, what I would consider, like, a Birkin in uh-huh. In the standard kind of standing in line for beer releases mm-hmm. is it's a Yeti kind of cooler bag.
And it's like, it looks like a Yeti, or
no,
is
it's
Yeti
called,
a
it's
brand?
Called Yeti. It's called Yeti, oh, okay. And it's like goes for like $300.
In my mind, I was picturing this big white fuzzy.
Purse. Yeah, I was just like a Yeti. Like, are they like they're like things look like Yetis? I thought that was cute, but yeah. If it's just a brand, never mind.
It's a brand.
It could have been cuter,
but it's a really cool looking
they'd
bag.
They'd be looking down yeah. on me with my Target bags.
Yeah, you know, people go out of their way to not take like those kind of everyday bags.
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
Yeah, it's like I feel that that's a thing.
So
quit ruining my beer with these hipster stories.
I know. Yeah. Sorry. All right, guys. So what do you guys think? Ready to review?
Mm. Yes. This is Kristen. It's very citrusy to me.
Yes.
There is that that quintessential IPA bite at the end, though, but it's not overbearing. It's not overpowering. It does linger mm-hmm. for sure. But I would give this a very strong full for me. Mm-hmm. I could drink this with a meal. I could drink this at a barbecue or, you know, just enjoying it as we are. Mm-hmm. Hanging out, so
oh, absolutely.
I'm looking here to see. I'm looking at our rating to make sure that full. Yeah, I think I'm a full.
Yeah, I'm definitely a full as well. I think it's a signature. Their signature kind of taste, the one that they always shoot for, and I think it's nice and crisp. It's really light, although it's a 8.3, right?
Yes.
And it's like like Kristen always says, it's a scary beer because you don't really taste it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you have like two, you probably are out for the count, especially on an empty stomach. So I'm going to give it a full as well.
I really like this. And I'm actually going to give it a rigid because when I first drank it, like the smell, like, yeah, like I know how IPA smell now.
Yes.
And so I was just like, oh, definitely an IPA. But I really like the, like, and it's not like, like sugar sweet.
Right.
That's true. A little tarty goodness.
Yeah, it has like, it's sweet and it's mostly tart. And it does, and you can taste the hops, mm-hmm. but I don't actually mind this one because it's like a little nip at the tip of my tongue. So it lingers, but it's not like a bad one. It's not overpowering. So I really, really like this. This is really, really good. So I am giving it a rigid. This is something that
this
I
is
would
amazing.
Definitely
repeat. This is a moment in history in our podcast.
Yeah, it is.
That Jen gives it a greater review than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
And if we were doing number ratings, a full is a 4 out of 5, which is what both Sarah and I did. And a rigid is a 5 out of 5. So yes, Jen and an IPA at that. Jen rating an IPA a rigid. That's pretty. That is a moment of history.
Moment of history.
Nice. Yeah, all right, guys. That's awesome. So if you get a chance or if you're doing beer trading, it's definitely something to go out and try to acquire. All right, guys. Now it's time for our book review.
Today we're doing books.
Books.
Yeah, books.
Plural.
Plural. And they are all by the same author.
Excuse me. Yes, his name is Anthony Mendez. And Sarah, you actually met Anthony in person, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And he's wonderful. He's kind. He's very nice. He's very excited about his projects. And he's also the narrator of Jane the Virgin.
When you told me that, I was so excited. I've only watched the first probably season and a half of Jane the Virgin because I was in the middle of watching it when we moved, and then we didn't have cable anymore, and I had a whole bunch of shows that were on my DVR that I ended up losing, and so I've never gone back to catch up, and now I think I would need to start over. But I love that show. It kind of reminded me of kind of being in the vein of like fun soap opera-y, like Ugly Betty kind of. And the narration is like so good and makes it so funny. Yes. So when you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I totally had to have like one of those moments because you guys know I'm the nervous one. I'm the one who like breaks out into weird sweats. So what I did is like I you know kind of psyched myself out, and then I went over to his table, and then I said, you know what, I always sweat, I always get nervous, but I do want to interview you, so I'm just gonna chat with you until I feel comfortable enough not to sweat on camera. And he's like, sure, that's perfect. So then we were talking and stuff, and it was really, he's super nice and he was so patient. And finally, I set up my tripod. I put the video on because it was going to be initially a video interview. Mm-hmm. And I had my microphone, and then I climbed under the table to get to him. And then we were talking, and it was such a great interview. We had I learned so many cool things. He was so nice. And then the audio did not come out on the video. Mm. So all there is like a hum.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But you can watch the video on Instagram.
You can watch the video. Yes. And you can lip sync.
Yeah, you know what? If you guys want to do bad lip reading, you can totally do that. Send it to us. We'll post it up on our Instagram. But yeah, it didn't come out. But he was kind enough to say that if we ever wanted to interview him, he was cool with it.
Yeah. And don't I remember you saying that he was totally inviting us to come do like a tour?
Yes.
Of the set?
Yes. He's like, do you guys want to come on set? I'm like, oh my God, what? Yes. Are you kidding me? Of course. He's like, you've never been. And I'm like, what?
Why is he saying you've never been?
No, like
everybody just is like, yeah, I've been to the set of Jane the Virgin.
Yeah.
I've been to a set of anything. Like, right? Okay. To be fair, like I, as a school field trip, we actually did go to a movie set. Uh-huh. And my brother has to, so I kind of know.
Yeah.
How they are?
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I waited in line for 11 hours to see a taping of Friends. And we finally got in, and we only got to see like probably not even 10 minutes, and it was over. Because I guess after they fill the seats, they would, every time anyone would leave, they would just let people trickle in. But we didn't actually get to get in until like the very, very end. And we saw it. We were in there. I can say that I experienced it. But it was a long day.
Wow.
11 hours.
So an actual invitation to just come right in. That's VIP treatment.
Completely. Yeah. And I actually am current on Jane the Virgin. And that's saying a lot of this. If you guys haven't seen it, I think it's amazing. And the thing is, I used to watch it on Hulu, and then Hulu could no longer stream it because the CW got their own app.
Right, yes.
And the CW's app is free, but my Apple TV doesn't have the CW app. So I end up watching it on my laptop on my iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
And it really takes you out of what you normally do, like your routine, to go and try to watch a show on your, you know, on a whole different app.
Right,
that you have to log into, and then...
Yes, that's why I stopped watching CW shows, because when they took everything off Hulu, I was like, that's like one too many steps that I need to go through, so I'll just wait till it comes on Netflix.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how I felt, but I gotta say, I do take that extra sip for Jane the Virgin, and I did take that extra sip for iZombie.
Honestly, that means a lot.
That does mean a lot.
I dropped The Flash. I dropped Arrow. Mm-hmm. I dropped Riverdale, but Jane the Virgin, I continue to watch. Mm-hmm. And even the placement of like their episodes is not really user friendly. I don't feel that it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I go and I search it out.
Yeah.
Just because I really love the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, probably something lesser known about Anthony Mendez, besides the fact his role of being the narrator on Jane the Virgin, is that he is also a comic book creator, which I never would have ever guessed, and have never seen any of these titles around before, which now that we do know this, I'm so excited to be able to share with other people so that they also know this part of Anthony and his creativity. And so today what we're doing is we are reviewing two of his books. The very first ever comic written by him, called Pedro and Miso. And the second one is, I don't know how much long after the first one it came out. I don't remember reading any of that info, but it's called Mike Tomb, and it's Mike Tomb Unrest in Peace. And there's actually some interesting tidbits about that too, but I guess we can just start with the first one, Pedro and Miso.
Yes. First of all, I gotta say, I really like the kind of the nod to the Spider-Man cover. Kristen, do you know what Spider-Man cover that is?
It's Amazing Fantasy 15.
Oh, look at that. I knew she would know. I knew it, because she actually is an inspired a character that also was inspired that cover.
Eddie did an Amazing Fantasy 15 art print of him of me actually carrying him.
Yeah.
And the best thing I love about that is that he initially I think he initially drew it with shoes on me, and then he was like, no, something's not right, and he changed it and he added chanclas.
Yeah.
And there's one of the chanclas on my feet is like barely hanging as I'm swinging through the air. Oh,
yeah. Now I'm gonna have to look for that, because I know you were wearing chanclas, but I didn't remember seeing one hanging off a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But yes, there's a honorable mention, what would you call it, like fan art inspiration or
an homage?
Homage,
yeah.
Gracias. Mm-hmm. I was like really struggling to find the word.
He says that he was very inspired by a lot of that storytelling during that comic era, and so he wanted to really kind of put that feel on his comic.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go right into it. We start off with Pedro Paredes, and he is a kid that lives on the streets, and he has a best friend who's a cat named Miso.
Yes, so he's homeless.
Yes.
And how old do you think that he is?
I believe he said he was 10 years old.
Okay. 10?
Okay.
Yeah. Another thing to point out about Pedro is that he is super smart. He's like beyond intelligent. Like, I feel like there are certain conversations he has that where he's like problem solving, and I don't know. It's just amazing.
Yes.
I really like that.
In multiple panels, there are scenes where he's kind of looking at a situation, and there's math equations that are like hovering over his head, as if to. What I got from that is it was showing the reader that his mind is working in all these complicated ways, trying to figure out
and calculate
the best way to get through this situation. And it kind of made me think of Moon Girl.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And so that was kind of cool. I really liked that. I really liked showing, I liked it visually showing that he's super smart, but then also kind of that contrast of him being a street kid, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like the kind of like the attitudes that we associate with like the homeless and stuff, like theft and what we would say is petty theft and vandalism, to him is just ways of
surviving. Yeah.
And I think he did a very good job with depicting that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Depicting that he's a good kid stuck in a bad situation.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did we hear or read about his parents, his situation, how he became homeless?
No, they haven't touched on that yet.
Just issue one.
Yeah, this is issue one. And there's a panel where he describes, he's very attached to these comic books, these books that he actually ended up leaving behind because he had to run away from the cops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he actually was desperate to get them back, because in one of them, it's to Pedro from Dad.
Yeah.
And it was like, in the panel, which was a flashback, you see that his mom was like, see, he does love you. Mm-hmm. So I guess what happens was, and I got some insider information because of the interview. He said that it has very much to do with how when your parents, you know, you grow up and they're always working. And they don't really have time to kind of play with you and take you out and stuff like that, because their main goal is to put a roof over your head and food in your belly. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the kids don't understand that that's like their way of telling you they love you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Instead of like, you know, whereas now you constantly remind them, okay, I love you, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like especially first-generation parents that actually immigrate to the U.S., they're like really focused on work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where that was inspired from, that kind of scene and that attachment he has to this book that is dedicated to him from his dad. Mm-hmm. Because we know his dad is gone.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's where he got that inspiration, and that's why he try to portray that in these panels.
I found it really interesting. There's I don't know if it was in the book or something that I read on the internet that Anthony himself was inspired to create Pedro from his own childhood experiences of basically pretending to be a child superhero.
Yeah. And he has like on the front of the comic, he has like a little letter kind of,
okay,
guess, to
so
the
that's
leader.
Where I read it.
Yeah, and he says that, yeah, that he, when he was younger, he and he would play
he was Web Kid.
Yeah,
that was the name of his, yeah.
He was, yeah. He pretended he was Spider-Man. That the kind of the place that this story takes place in is the neighborhood that he grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, uh-huh. That's right. Yes,
and I think that's really, really cool, because you can kind of, in the artwork, you can kind of like see that little detail and stuff like that. But what I really, really liked about this is the kind of, the more like mature tones to it as well. And that kind of like, as he's doing his own thing and he's trying to get his comics back, you can kind of see in the background stuff that is very real to today's topics, like gentrification.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yes.
And like kind of like police, not brutality, but definitely indifference, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Or especially, I don't want to cut you off, especially that one guy who was talking to Pedro when Pedro tossed his trash. Uh-huh. He's like, oh my God, you people are so dirty.
Was
like,
he a police officer?
He was a police detective.
Detective, yeah.
Detective, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was like,
I mean, because there's also some corruption going on.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Like there's a whole slew of things. You got government conspiracy going on, gentrification, police brutality.
Yeah.
There's some heavy stuff in there, but it's all kind of like, this is all happening around him. Mm-hmm. The story is very much focused on him and him being a kid and him trying to, in this issue, him just trying to get his comics back.
Right.
And I think that's, exactly. There's a certain charm to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that.
You meet another worker. Her name is Dominga, and she works for what I'm thinking is a nonprofit. It's called Activo, Working for Our Children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see that too, the part of the people in the community that are trying to protect their community, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked her. I want to see what happens with her. I feel like she's going to die.
Oh, no.
Like, I feel like these people that are trying to buy up all the buildings around to, you know, for gentrification purposes or whatnot. And I feel like she's standing in their way, and I feel like she's in danger.
I don't think she's going to die. If I had to speculate about what's going to happen, I think she's going to take Pedro in.
Mm. Oh, snap. I didn't even think of that, but you're
cat,
right.
We've been talking about Pedro this
That's
whole time,
right.
But
yes.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, there is another title
there
character.
There is another titular character to it. His name is Miso. And Miso, as Sarah told us, is Dominican for cat. Or at least that's what Dominicans call cats.
Interesting.
Like, sort of like Mexicans calling cats bichos.
Uh-huh. Bicho, 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 bicho.
I've never heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I grew up with that, bicho, bicho. And I was
what
is that? And like we call kitty, kitty, kitty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same thing. So
I'm
they
trying
call
to
it
think
so,
now,
so,
what
so,
did
so?
My grandmother call? She always had cats, but what did she call them?
My mom, now that you think of my grandma and my mom call cats a certain word, but I can't recall what it is right now. Which is funny because there's a bunch of cats. Like my neighbor has like 5 cats, and they're always like by our house, and my mom's always chasing them. I'm like, get out of here! But I am blanking out on the word right now. Hmm. Hopefully, maybe I'll remember next time.
So the interesting thing about miso is that Pedro appears to be able to communicate with. Is it a him or a her? I'm gonna say him. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He totally reminds me of Salem the cat.
Yeah.
Like he has that little toot. I love it.
He very much is kind of like his Jiminy Cricket, Pedro's Jiminy Cricket, trying to get him to have a conscience and to make good decisions.
Salty, sassy Jiminy Cricket.
But one of the things I've noticed, because I read it twice, I was like, I think that Pedro is the only one that can communicate with Miso. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's all in his head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's really actual communication, like the cat actually talks. Mm-hmm. But we see that the cat belongs to Dominga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, because he's like, well, you're a street cat. He goes, no, I have a home.
Yeah.
They have this cute little conversation banter. Like, for instance, he's like, oh, you're so emotional or you're so salty or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, it's probably because I'm neutered. And he's like, it's all the fault of the one game show host guy.
Yeah.
And that was like a direct reference to The Price is Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was his name? Bob Barker. Don't forget to spay or neuter your pets.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. Like a throwback.
I think Drew Carey still does it.
Yeah. Really? Well, I haven't seen Drew Carey as the host of The Price is Right.
I don't watch The Price is Right because it's like, what time does it even take place? It's like early in the morning. Yeah.
It's like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. No.
It's really cool that this book is available on Comixology. It is a digital right now. We have the paper, the in print copy. But you can also
a floppy.
We have a floppy. You can also pick it up on Comixology. And so
they actually have issues 2 and 3 also on Comixology, which I wanted to get before we started recording, but I just had no time. But I was kind of really want to know what's going on with the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, because we have another book to go some other things to talk about that one. You want to save the reviews for the end or you want to do it now?
Let's save it to the end.
Okay.
So Mike Tomb, guys. How do you guys?
Mike Tomb, was it? Unrest in peace.
Yes,
exactly. Unrest in peace. When I read that, all I could think about was what I say a lot now.
Rest in pieces.
Rest in pieces. I say that a lot, thanks to my gaming group.
When I read it initially, I was really confused about a whole slew of things in this particular book, mm-hmm. and it wasn't until I went online to do some research for notes and also read. In this book as well, some of his info in the back,
mm-hmm.
That some of the things kind of resonated and I understood a little bit better and I had a little bit more of an appreciation for the story.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. One of those things is that this particular storyline is about Michael Gonzalez, who is part of a family who owns a tomb making business.
Uh-huh.
Like, gravestone.
MK Mortuaries Monuments. MK Monuments.
Yeah.
And he's Dominican American, and those two particular things are in this story because Anthony himself is Dominican American and comes from a family who has a family-owned business that creates tombstones, mm-hmm. and that he's the only one in the family who is not in the family business.
What?
I thought that was like super. I mean, what a interesting family business. I'm sure when you're in it and it's your family, you're like, "Oh, this sucks." But I found it so fascinating.
I mean, it's a job.
The plot thickens.
How what he said in like his letter in the back, how he says like when most people are in cemeteries, they either recall fond memories
mm-hmm.
or they kind of find it a little bit morbid.
Yeah.
But he thinks about, where was where did the gravestone stone come from? Like basically it's like schematics and stuff like that. And I think that like that's you're like yeah like it's something that you know, so you'd be like, architecture, stuff like that. Like, he said, like, tomb size, what are the city limits on stuff like that. Yeah. And that was interesting in itself, too.
I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff that that you know, being involved in that business, and just the regular layperson doesn't.
Yeah, because I'd never thought of that. Yeah. I was just all like, to me, it's just like a graveyard's a graveyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's true. Like, when we were trying to purchase one, we had to stick to a specific design and specific indications on what we can and could not put on it because of the area she was buried in, because all the areas have names.
Oh, yes.
Like, she's in the Chime Winds, something like that. Chamber of Winds. Anyway, so the idea is that they all had kind of like their design along, and so you can't just do whatever you want, which I would have wanted to do, like,
right?
Let's throw all this stuff on it, and
you can't do that.
big old monument, was Doctor Who, those angels with the covered I would totally go with that.
Well, Pedro Miso was very charming and very like heroic in its own way,
and
it was very
funny.
Superhero.
Yeah.
It was very superhero, and it was funny. I think Mike Tomb, Unrest in Peace, is more serious in that it kind of makes you think about these things, about death and the passing away of not just loved ones, but like family.
Yeah.
Especially family that you don't necessarily get along with.
Yeah.
Or like, but they're still family. It's a bit more heavier topics, and not that they're like there's like more violence or stuff like that, or like this really, it's more like in the topics that it touches.
Yeah, definitely a lot more heavier topics. There's a page with some panels on it that you get some very visceral drawings of the child abuse that Michael had actually experienced at the hands of his father. And so throughout the story, we already know that his father is gone, but we're kind of seeing him grapple with it's his father. He was physically abusive, and there's like this dichotomy of how that makes a child feel towards. I mean, it's always your parents. You always have this love, but then there's this resentment and other stuff that comes up from the abuse. And I think we see a lot of that building up towards more of the story in issue one.
Well, not only that, and you throw on it on top of it a family business.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not only that, then we find out that the dad sold most of the shares.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he was reluctant to answer mail that was directly tied into the business. It's just all over not all over the place, but it's like so heavy on the topics of life and, you know, what you need to do and taking charge and adulting, as they say.
Yeah.
So I felt really moved by this book.
I think there's a lot of multi-levels of Michael Gonzalez, the main character, of him dealing with his relationship with his father in many different ways through the business, through him coming to terms and forgiving his father for the abuse. But also, we come to find out in issue one that he has developed a life-threatening illness that directly is a result of working at this business.
It's actually linked only to people that work with Stone, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was very sad.
It was very sad and like very. And this is the funny thing is that this book has a fantastical element to it as well.
Yes.
Very much. You want to talk about magical realism.
Yes.
This is very much magical realism. But I find it funny that the things that grabbed me the most were the more real topics. Like you get this mysterious figure who appears to Mike when he
near-death experience.
Yeah, near-death experience and stuff like that. And he doesn't really seem to be aware of it.
Right.
Or it's just on, like, the periphery of his vision. But, like, there's a certain creepy element to that, too, as well. But I think, to me, like, what resonated with me the most was something that the figure said. Like, he's just, like, he says something in the book that it was just like, just because they're family doesn't mean you have to forgive them for everything. And I was just like, hold on.
I was just like, speaking to my soul.
I was just like, okay, all right, someone needs to give me a warning for this thing, because I was not prepared for these emotions today. I was just like, ooh, talk about issues. Like, yeah. We touching on some heavy stuff here. Yeah. And like, that resonated with me. And I was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I totally feel you. For me, that feeling was surfacing when he was reluctant to do what he had to do as far as like opening his mail and actually doing something about that.
Yeah.
Like, for a long time, I was really reluctant to do that kind of stuff with the state and everything like that. And it was it was kind of putting me back there. Like, it would have been easier had I tackled it and got rid of that whole scenario than dragging it on for as long as I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, that spoke to me. I was like, oh my God, I'm not the only one who does this.
Yeah. And so like, I just want to have like, and I checked the dates right now. Pedro Miso was released August 2018. And a month later, Mike Toom.
Wait, was released August 2018?
Yeah, that's what it says inside.
So this year?
This year. Yeah.
What?
Okay.
Yeah. And then a month later it was Mike Toom. Unless like he, but writing itself and getting stuff published
right
does take a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So while the script, he could have worked on the script for a long number of
yeah, and I think he did say that that years. He did work on the script and he actually talked to other people
yes,
about it.
I read that in one of his interviews that he had worked on it for many, many years.
Yeah, yeah. And then he because I think it was a script at first, and I think
yes,
then
yes.
he decided to go the comic book form.
Yes, and in fact, Pedro and Miso is something that he is making into what is called an action comic. So he's doing like a video of it, like of stills, I guess.
Oh, wow.
That's
okay.
What he wants to do. I was reading some different interviews on it. And that was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah. And that's so cool because this could actually be on several platforms. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And having both 2 and 3 in Comixology is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts before we rate the books?
I just really like how kind of different the both books are.
They're very different from each
They're
other.
They're very,
yes.
very different from each other. And after reading Mike Toom and just like reading at Pedro Miso and knowing about what he's in, there is also kind of a difference in the style of writing as well. And it's I always find that very interesting. I like going back, like even with like writers and stuff like that. Like right now, Tom King is like everybody's favorite right now. And he's a good writer and stuff like that. But when I first read some of his original stuff, and back when he was writing Grayson, I actually didn't like Grayson. But, yeah, I didn't like how Grayson was written. But it wasn't until afterwards, once he's done Omega Man, Vision, and now Batman, you could see that he got a lot better.
Yeah.
And I especially love Vision.
Vision's amazing.
And Sheriff of Babylon. Sheriff of Babylon was when I fell in love with his writing.
That's Valiant, right? Sheriff of Babylon?
No. It was Vertigo.
Yeah,
Vertigo.
It was Vertigo. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Sheriff of Babylon? Oh, I don't know.
It was either Vertigo or Image.
I want to say Image, but...
It might have been... Yeah, I think it might have been Image. I think you're right. I'm most likely wrong. but I think it might have been Image. But Sheriff of Babylon, it was basically an indie. Mm. But just going off of that, it's kind of like, I like seeing that, basically that kind of change as well. And for me, I'm just going to jump right into rating it. Pedro and Miso, I will give it, and for Mike Toom on Rest in Pieces, I'm going to give them 2 conchas. Because first reading Toom, it wasn't Mike Toom. It wasn't until towards the end, once I read it, the stuff like that I was able to piece some stuff together. And I was just like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah.
And Pedro and Miso, like, it was good, but I could tell that the writing style, he hadn't quite had it down yet. But you can definitely see that by Mike Toom, it's his writing has gotten a lot better. But I think he could do more, and I'm very much more interested in seeing what else he has to do. So for right now, I will give it 2 conchas.
Yeah. I think that my thoughts are very similar to what Jen's are with both the books. And I'm also giving both Pedro and Miso and Mike Toom 2 conchas each. And I really enjoyed the story in both of them that I think I haven't gotten yet. Does that make sense? Like, I think both of them were really good groundwork for great stories that I think are going to be coming, that things are going to come together in future issues. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, in the first one, definitely, or Pedro and Miso, definitely, I think that you can tell it's a first comic, if that makes sense. Like, it's somebody's first comic.
Yeah.
The second one, again, like Jen said, the writing is, I mean, totally different, which I love. I love when creators do that. But like I mentioned in the beginning, I was kind of confused, and not until I did more background research and got some kind of personal information about it did I understand more of the story and kind of, like Jen said, piece some things together of what was going on. And I am, after reading that and after getting more information, am interested to continue to read and want to read any follow-up stories, and am really excited to see in particular where Mike Toom goes, because one of the things that in interviews Anthony talks about is that this book is a lot about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that really intrigues me.
Yeah.
With this story.
This is Sarah, and yeah, it's very difficult to rate a comic based on just the first issue.
Yeah.
So we usually review trade paperbacks where there's like a story arc at least 5 to 6 issues in trade paperback, so we get more of the meat of the story. But I'm gonna go with 3 only because I really love all the characters. I think I identify with all of them, especially the cat. I love. Which I didn't expect because I'm a dog person. So I really, I can't wait to see who the man in the black suit is. I called him the man in the black hat, but reading more about his stuff in the back of the pages is more of the man in the black suit. So I'm excited about that, the paranormal aspect of Mike Toom. And also, I want to see what goes on with Pedro, because I want to know more of his background story with his parents. So I'm going to go with 3 conchas. And I guess that concludes our review of the books. 2 conchas from Jen and Kristen, and 3 from Sarah. All right, guys. Pick it up if you get a chance.
Oh, actually, I wanted to. Is there a something in the book that tells us where we can pick up these particular books? Pedro and Miso on Comixology, but is Mike Toom also available on Comixology?
I did not look for Mike Toom on Comixology. Okay. But we're definitely going to post up a link.
Yeah, we'll post it.
Yeah, you can follow him on Twitter, on Instagram. I don't think he has a Facebook, but yes, we'll definitely post up that link. All right, guys, it's time for On My Radar.
Yes, so I have an interesting On My Radar today. It's a book that just came out this week, which is, let's see, October 3rd already? Mm. Oh my goodness, that was Wednesday?
Yeah, new comics this week was on October 3rd.
Okay, so there is a book that came out called Juke Joint.
Yes, I saw that.
And
I don't even know what that could even be from the title.
So, Juke Joint is written by T. Franklin, and you might know or remember T. Franklin from another one of our On My Radars, or maybe Juntos, I don't even remember, but she wrote Bingo Love. So if you have read Bingo Love, you know T. Franklin.
I love Bingo Love.
Yes, it's such a great story.
It's so cute.
But this book is all about a club that is kind of like a... Geez, I want to say that this is like a bitch planet on steroids type of book.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
So this book, T has been writing for quite some time, and it's very timely that it's come out now with all the Me Too movement and all the stuff that's going on with Kavanaugh and things like that. But this book specifically deals a lot with domestic abuse, racism, and social injustice. And it's a 5-issue horror miniseries set in a brothel slash jazz club that touches on these issues. She herself wrote it to help her deal with her own past trauma. And I read some of the pages. I read the preview. And basically, there are rules that you have to follow in Juke Joint. Keep your hands to yourself, respect everyone, and follow the rules. And as I said, it's a brothel slash jazz joint. And if any of the men do not follow the rules, they pay for it dearly.
With their lives. No, I don't know.
Yes, it's a horror. It's okay. A horror comic. And one of the panels that I read was this guy who was trying to force himself on this woman. And the bouncer came and said, "You didn't follow the rules. You're out of here." And out in the forest, there was a woman that is telling him, I can give you what you need or whatever, and starts kissing him and literally swallows and bites off his lower jaw.
Wow.
And so one of the interesting things about Juke Joint is that this is the first image series written by a black woman, drawn by a black woman, colored by a Thai woman, and lettered by an Argentinian man. So it is a book full of people of color creators, and it's what I've read seems so amazing. I haven't read the whole issue because I meant to bring it home to read for my On My Radar, and I left it at home. So I just was able to read what I could find on previews online. But it looks amazing. The art looks amazing.
Oh, yeah. And the cover art also grabbed me.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so Image is doing domestic violence covers for October. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And one of the covers is a domestic violence variant cover, and all of the proceeds from those particular covers are going to charity. So, and also T is very, very proud of the fact that in the back of all of these books, she is going to have a space for survivors, quote unquote. In the back of each issue, there will be a chance for readers to tell their own stories of survival, whether it be in comic form, poem form, or prose or essay, and they will be published and you will be compensated for it. Wow. So if you yourself have a story that you want to share that you are interested in maybe having published in the back of Juke Joint, you can send an email to Juke Joint Comic, that's JOOKJOINT comic at gmail.com, and put your artistic creativity up for maybe being part of this book. But one thing further that I wanted to say, I mentioned that my On My Radar kind of flows into my Juntos y Fuertes. My Juntos y Fuertes fuertes is an organization called Joyful Heart Foundation. And it is an organization that was founded by Mariska Hargitay. You might know her as a detective in Law & Order SVU. She's the founder, and the mission is to heal, educate, and empower survivors of sexual assault, domestic violence, and child abuse. You can find them at joyfulheartfoundation.org. And the reason why this ties into Juke Joint is that is the organization that the money from their variant domestic violence cover is being donated to. And it's just what I read has been so amazing so far, and I'm just really excited to read more. Definitely.
Yeah, it awesome. Sounds very interesting, and it very timely as well.
Cool. That sounds awesome. I'm really interested to read the backstories on the back of the issue.
Yeah.
True stories about survivors and what they had to go through. So I think this is really cool. Like you said, Bitch Planet on steroids.
So if you're interested in donating to domestic violence organizations. And reading comics, definitely keep your eye out for those DV variant covers. And if you want to find out more about the organization that the proceeds of those covers are going to, you can find that out at joyfulheartfoundation.org.
Cool. Right on. All right, guys, that has been our episode. Thank you so much for listening. And we are going to be at...
Oh, yes.
Kale. It's C-A-L-E. It stands for I don't know what, because I am unprepared. But we're going to have a table at this Kale. And it's in South Central or East?
It's in Watts, I believe.
Watts. All right. I'm so off. But it's October the 20th. So, yes, we're going to be at Kale on October the 20th. We have a table there and we're going to have some goodies. And hopefully we can get our swag on time to give out swag as well.
Yes. So Kale is actually a comic art and literacy expo. That's what Kale stands for.
Woo-hoo!
And this is the second year that it has happened. And it's sponsored by a place called Home. So those of you may know about a place called Home. It's an organization in Los Angeles that helps a lot of at-risk and high-risk youth. And the date is October 20th from 11 to 4 o'clock. And it is at The Bridge. That's the name of the, I guess, the site that it's going to be held at, and the address is 2901 South Central Avenue in Los Angeles. The zip code is 90011, and you can enjoy us all, because we're going to be there for a day of comics, art, and literacy. There's going to be free books, free comics, workshops, and there will be artists and writers there sharing their own expertise.
Excellent. I'm so excited about that because they're going to give us some free lunch. So I'm excited about that. So come on down, guys. Support this wonderful event, and it's free. So definitely come on down.
And a little side note, Comadre Comics not only will be there, but we, the person who first... I guess this was her brainstorm, is Bernice Telly, who is the artist of Monty Gomez is a luchador. So another little Comadre Comics connection.
That's right. All right, guys, thanks for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.